statement, the Prime Minister.
With permission, Mr. Speaker, I should like to make a statement on the Falkland Islands. Early this morning, in Port Stanley, 74 days after the Falkland Islands were invaded, General Moore accepted from General Menendez the surrender of all the Argentine forces in East and West Falkland, together with their arms and equipment. In a message to the Commander-in-Chief Fleet, General Moore reported, "The Falkland Islands are once more under the government desired by their inhabitants. God save the Queen." General Menendez has surrendered some 11,000 men in Port Stanley and some 2,000 in West Falkland. In addition, we had already captured and were holding elsewhere on the islands 1,800 prisoners, making in all some 15,000 prisoners of war now in our hands. The advance of our forces in the last few days is the culmination of a determined military effort to compel the Argentine government to withdraw its forces from the Falkland Islands. On the night of Friday, the 11th of June, men of 42 and 45 commandos and the 3rd Battalion, the Parachute Regiment, supported by elements of the Royal Artillery and Royal Engineers, mounted an attack on Argentine positions on Mount Harriet, Two Sisters, and Mount Longdon. They secured all their objectives and during the next day consolidated their positions in the face of continuing resistance. I regret to inform the House that 5 Royal Marines, 18 paratroopers, and 2 Royal Engineers lost their lives in those engagements. Their families are being informed. 72 Marines and paratroopers were wounded. We have no details of Argentine casualties. Hundreds of prisoners and large quantities of equipment were taken in these operations. The land operations were supported by Harrier attacks and naval gunfire from ships of the task force, which made a major contribution to the success of our troops. In the course of the bombardment, however, HMS Glamorgan was hit by enemy fire. We now know that 13 of the crew died in this attack or are missing. Throughout Sunday, the 13th of June, the 3rd Commando Brigade maintained pressure on the enemy from their newly secured forward positions. Meanwhile, men of the 5th Infantry Brigade undertook reconnaissance missions in preparation for the next phase of the operations. HMS Hermes flew her 1,000th Sea Harrier mission since leaving the United Kingdom. The Argentines mounted 2 air raids that day. The first was turned back by Harriers of the task force before it could reach the Falklands. In the second raid, A4 aircraft made an unsuccessful bombing run and 1 Mirage aircraft was shot down. During the night of Sunday, the 13th of June, the second phase of the operations commenced. The 2nd Battalion, the Parachute Regiment, secured Wireless Ridge, and the 2nd Battalion, the Scots Guards, took Tumbledown Mountain by first light on Monday, the 14th of June. The 1st 7th Gurkhas advanced on Mount William, and the Welsh Guards on Sapper Hill. At 2 p.m. London time, large numbers of Argentine troops were reported to be retreating from Mount William, Sapper Hill, and Moody Brook in the direction of Port Stanley. British forces pressed forward to the outskirts of Port Stanley. Large numbers of Argentines threw down their weapons and surrendered. At 4 o'clock, the Argentine garrison indicated its willingness to talk. Orders were given to our forces to fire only in self-defense. Shortly before 5 o'clock, a white flag appeared over Port Stanley. Initial contact was made with the enemy by radio. By midnight, General Moore and General Menendez were talking. The surrender of all the Argentine forces on East and West Falkland was agreed at 1 a.m. today, London time. Some of our forces are proceeding to West Falkland to organize the surrender of the Argentine forces there. We are now tackling urgently the immense practical problems of dealing with the Argentine prisoners on the islands. The weather conditions are severe. Permanent accommodation is very limited, and much of the temporary accommodation which we had hoped to use was lost when the Atlantic conveyor was sunk on the 25th of May. We have already repatriated to Argentina almost 1,400 prisoners, and the further 15,000 now in our custody are substantially more than we had expected. With the help of the International Red Cross, we are taking urgent steps to safeguard these prisoners and hope to evacuate them as soon as possible from the islands in accordance with our responsibilities under the Geneva Convention. This is a formidable task. We have today sent to the Argentine government, through the Swiss government, a message seeking confirmation that Argentina, like Britain, considers all hostilities between us in the South Atlantic, and not only on the islands themselves, to be at an end. It is important that this should be established with clarity and without delay. We must now bring life in the islands back to normal as quickly as possible, despite the difficult conditions and the onset of the Antarctic winter. Mines must be removed. The water supply in Stanley is not working, and there will be other urgent tasks of repair and reconstruction. Mr. Rex Hunt and members of the Islands Council at present in this country will return as soon as possible. Mr. Hunt will concentrate on civilian matters. General Moore will be responsible for military matters. They will, in effect, act as civil and military commissioners and will, of course, work in the closest cooperation. After all that has been suffered, it is too early to look much beyond the beginning of the return to normal life. In due course, the islanders will be able to consider and express their views about the future. When the time is right, we can discuss with them ways of giving their elected representatives an expanded role in the government of the islands. We shall uphold our commitment to the security of the islands. If necessary, we shall do this alone. But I do not exclude the possibility of associating other countries with their security. Our purpose is that the Falkland Islands should never again be a victim of unprovoked aggression. Recognizing the need for economic development, I have asked Lord Shackleton to update his 1976 report on the economic potential of the islands. He has agreed to do this as a matter of urgency, and I am most grateful to him. Mr. Speaker, the House will join me in expressing our deep sense of loss over those who have died and our sorrow for their families. The final details will not become clear for a few days yet, but we know that some 250 British servicemen and civilians have been killed. They died that others may live in freedom and justice. The Battle of the Falklands was a remarkable military operation, boldly planned, bravely executed, and brilliantly accomplished. We owe an enormous debt to the British forces and to the Merchant Marine. We honour them all. They have been supported by a people united in defence of our way of life and of our sovereign territory.
Yeah. Michael Putt!
Speaker, we on this side of the House, of course, wish to join at once in the thanks and congratulations which the Right Honourable Lady has given to the servicemen and their commanders and the way they have discharged their duties over these dangerous weeks, and we wish that to be emphasised right at the beginning. I think the relief which the House felt and expressed last night when we first heard the news derived partly from the belief that we were able to avoid not merely the hideousness of a bloody battle at Port Stanley, but also what might be the consequences of such a battle, and I believe that that sense of relief was very right and rightly expressed, and I believe we wish to express it again. But even so, as the Right Honourable Lady has herself emphasised in her final remarks, there have been severe casualties for this country, severe casualties in some of our great naval ports in Plymouth and Portsmouth and elsewhere, and severe casualties for others also. Then all there have been, as we must obviously recognise, very severe casualties amongst the Argentine forces themselves. And I am sure that we are all concerned about that too. But the sense of relief is a very great one, and I believe that all of us join in expressing our gratitude that the bloodshed is now coming to an end. But can I say to the Right Honourable Lady that I hope that we will have a further statement soon on these matters about the casualties when she has the further details to which she referred. And in the meantime, we express our great sympathy to all those families who have had to suffer the consequences of the casualties, and to express our determination as a House of Commons, I would hope, that proper ways are to be found to deal with the families and those who have been afflicted by what has happened. Now, can I just turn to the future for a moment? I don't expect the Right Honourable Lady to deal with all these matters now, and I don't think it is the best time to do so. And, of course, there is to be, bound to be, an interval when we deal with the immediate position on the island, and of course that interval is bound to be one in which normal operations cannot be envisaged. But I think it would be right for the Right Honourable Lady at a very early date to express the view of what we think about the future. I don't mean to describe the whole of the future, but to give some commitments about it, because it is not possible, in our view, for the government to contemplate, and the British government contemplating dealing with these matters over the years ahead alone by ourselves. The Right Honourable Lady says, I do not exclude the possibility of associating other countries in their security. I think that's a very modest statement of the requirement. I think she will have to go considerably further than that in the interests of the islanders and of the security of the islands themselves. And I do not believe it is possible for the government to exclude much greater consultations with other countries. Indeed, we are bound to do so under the resolutions which we ourselves signed. And so I hope that the Right Honourable Lady will give an absolute assurance, and she can give that assurance now, that we will be prepared to consult with other nations according to our own commitments under the United Nations Charter to ensure that we will provide for the future arrangements there. I hope that we will not exclude the possibilities of the trusteeship which were discussed earlier. And I say to those honourable members who try to exclude any of these possibilities, they had better look back and look at some of the changes in the government's own policy on these matters which have occurred over this period. And I believe the more we examine them, the more justice will be found in the case that we have consistently put on the subject throughout the whole of these discussions. I hope, therefore, that the Right Honourable Lady, even if she will not give the detailed commitment now, will give the commitment that, of course, she intends to carry out to the full, in the spirit and in the letter, the resolution that she and her government proposed in the name of this country at the United Nations. I don't know whether the Right Honourable Lady shakes her head. That would be a breach of faith if she were to abandon it. And I hope, therefore, that she will reiterate our allegiance on these questions. We have all these matters will have to be examined afresh later, including, as was mentioned at question time, the investigation of how the original crisis arose. But I say to the Right Honourable Lady that much the best course for the government is to recognise the commitments that they themselves have made on these international obligations, and to say that we will uphold them as determinedly as we have upheld the rights of British territory.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Right Honourable Gentleman for what he said about the men of our armed forces. We mourn their loss, and were dedicated to the cause for which they gave their lives. With regard to what he said about the United Nations resolution, may I point out to him that the withdrawal by the Argentines was not honoured, and our people had to go because they would not withdraw. Indeed, our people had to go and recover and recapture British territory. I cannot agree with him that those men risked their lives in any way to have a United Nations trusteeship. I believe they risked their lives to defend British sovereign territory, the British way of life, and the right of British people to determine their own future.
But still,
Will the Prime Minister consider allowing the House a special opportunity to pay full tribute to our forces after they've returned to this country? I think that would be appropriate. Secondly, could I ask her whether she's aware that the BBC at lunchtime were carrying allegedly authoritative reports about the form of inquiry which she was going to invite the other party leaders to participate in, and yet she has mentioned nothing today without going into the form. Without going into the form of that, will she undertake that the inquiry will be strong enough to include not just the matters leading up to the invasion, but questions like the sale of arms to the Argentine and the defence policy decisions which affect the equipment and operations of our Navy?
Mr. Speaker, I did refer to the form of inquiry earlier in questions and said shortly that I would be writing to opposition leaders. I believe the form of the inquiry should not be anything like as wide as the Right Honourable Gentleman suggests. Otherwise, it will never report. And I do not wish it would be the general, I do not believe it would be the general wish to have it as wide as that. That is a totally different kind of review from the one to which I thought that we were agreed. But I will be writing shortly to the Right Honourable Gentleman about it. But I do think that surely today is a day for congratulations and celebration and not for post-mortems.
Order. I propose to allow these questions exceptionally today to run for another half an hour, which would be a very good run for the House. Sir Edward Ducan.
Mr. Speaker, is my right honourable friend aware that the House and the nation will have noted with particular approval that sentence in her statement which indicated that we will not again allow the Falkland Islands to be the subject of unprovoked aggression? And secondly, meantime, is it not possible for her to say something to the House today about the situation of the local inhabitants of Port Stanley and of West Falkland? I'm sure many people would be grateful for information.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to my right honourable friend for what he said about defending the Falkland Islands so that they're never again the victim of aggression. With regard to the civilian population, information at present is sketchy because of appalling weather and the fact that there'd only been a few hours of daylight before I came down to the House. Initial indications are that the islanders are thrilled to see our forces and that in general they are safe and well, but we have no further details beyond that.
Enoch Powell.
Will the government be careful that nothing is done or said in the coming days which could be an obstacle to our securing compensation and satisfaction for the loss and damage which has been suffered as a result of this unprovoked aggression, both in the Falkland Islands and by this country?
Mr. Speaker, I most certainly will try to refrain from saying anything that will prejudice that, but I must point out to the Right Honourable Gentleman that we are not seeking compensation for that. We went to recapture the islands, to restore British sovereignty, which had not been lost because of the invasion, and also to restore British administration. That was our objective. I believe we have achieved it.
David Owen.
Would the Prime Minister confirm that it is not the intention to return all the Argentinian military until the Argentine has confirmed that all hostilities are ended in the Southern Atlantic? And would the Prime Minister, when considering what association with other countries might be developed for the long-term future of the Argentine, and before making any, for the Falklands, and before making any final decision, because I think it is too early to reach a firm conclusion as to how to handle the future, will she consult with the United States, which has been one of our most loyal allies throughout this, and has great interests in the organization of American states?
Mr. Speaker, with regard to the first point about the prisoners of war, it was because of that very point which the Right Honourable Gentleman had in mind, that we should not return all the prisoners of war until we were certain that we had achieved cessation of hostilities with the mainland of Argentina as well. It was precisely for that reason that I said we hope to evacuate the prisoners of war. We shall need to send back quite a considerable number, but we believe that we should withhold some, particular the officers and commanders of those forces, until we have achieved a ceasefire with the mainland as a whole. And with regard to the long-term future, again, as the Right Honourable Gentleman was the first to realise, it is British sovereign territory. They are British people. Of course, a number of people will be very interested in what happens to the future of those islands, but it is really for us to consult with the people themselves about their future, and then to make the very best possible arrangements we can for them. I recognise that they will need the friendliness of other states in the region, and I do not think it would be wise to go beyond that at this moment.
John Eden.
Following the successful outcome of this campaign, which would not have been possible without the supreme valour displayed by our forces, nor, and I think this should be emphasised, without the steady and resolute leadership shown from the start by the Prime Minister. Could my Right Honourable friend say whether in attempting to tackle some of the enormous and immediate logistical problems, such as the question of the shortage of water, it would be practicable to turn to Uruguay, Chile, or some other Latin American countries for help?
Mr. Speaker, I'm very grateful to my Right Honourable friend. We naturally wish to get help with the logistical problems from wherever we can, but of course there aren't really very many places which are near, and we had therefore had to prepare for some of these things in the supplies and provisions we sent down with the task force. I believe that we shall be all right for water. If we are not able to return some of the prisoners, we shall be needing some help with food and also with transport. But we have, I believe that the United States will be prepared to help with some of those things.
Mr. Tony Benn.
Apart from the inquiry, will the Prime Minister now publish the full texts of all the exchanges that took place with the UN, the Argentine, the Americans, so that we may see what happened?
And Peru.
A full list,
and Peru.
A full analysis of the cost in life, in equipment and in money in this tragic and unnecessary war, which the world knows very well is not going to provide an answer to the problem of the future of the Falklands, and that in the end there will have to be negotiations. And could the Prime Minister indicate with whom and when she would be ready to enter into such negotiations?
Mr. Speaker, with regard to the texts of all the negotiations, they are not mine to publish. We entered into them on a basis of confidence. I do not believe in breaking confidence. With regard to negotiations, I do not intend to negotiate on the sovereignty of the islands in any way except with the people who live there. That is my fervent belief. I've forgotten what the... With regard to what the Right Honourable Gentleman called it the unnecessary war. Tragic it may have been. But may I point out to the Right Honourable Gentleman, he would not enjoy the kind of freedom of speech to which he puts to such excellent use unless people had been prepared to fight for it.
Winston Churchill!
Well, that puts you well back in your place.
Now leave the chamber.
Is my Right Honourable friend aware that the nation owes this signal victory not only to the skill and courage of British forces, but also to her resolute leadership during these critical weeks? Is she further aware that the entire House will wish to be associated with the tribute that she has paid to those who will not be returning to this country from the South Atlantic? And in particular, would she associate us with her condolences to the families of those involved whose grief the entire nation shares?
I am grateful to my honourable friend. I think every honourable member would like to pay his or her own tribute, both to those who lost their lives, to those who have been injured, and also to the families without whose wonderful support they could never have gone and done the wonderful job they did.
Michael English!
Now that the war is almost over, will the Right Honourable Lady invite the Times to purchase the copyright of Oriana Fallaci's splendid interview with General Galtieri? It would be some recompense if the Times did make such a purchase and present that copyright to the British government, because after all, they took money from the Argentines to print 7,000 words of Argentine propaganda before most of our citizens died.
Mr. Speaker, that is not a matter for me. I'm sure that the honourable gentleman's message will have been heard by those who are in possession of this copyright. I can only say that I thought it was a very, very remarkable interview by a very remarkable journalist.
Reverend Ian Paisley.
Speaker, sir, I'd like to associate myself and on behalf of the people of Northern Ireland to salute the memory of those that gave their lives in defence of sovereign British territory and in defence of freedom. I'd like to remind the Prime Minister that at question time, a few weeks ago, I asked her, did she abide by two principles? One, the right to defend sovereign British territory, and two, to uphold the wishes of the people that lived in that territory. I would congratulate her that in this instance, she has been guided by those two principles. But I would remind her that yesterday, Ulster was mourning its dead as another young police officer was carried to the grave in the same fight for freedom. And I would urge the Prime Minister to tell Mr. Hawkey that the sovereignty of Northern Ireland cannot be challenged by him or anyone else, and that the majority of people in Ulster will be allowed to decide their own destiny. I'll not shit sit down.
I believe in both the principles which the honourable gentleman enunciated. We shall continue to uphold them, and I would like also to take this opportunity of paying tribute to all the security forces, both police and armed forces and the Ulster Defence Regiment, who've done wonderful things too in Northern Ireland and who are upholding the law and liberties in the same way as those who went to the Falklands.
Ashley.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the Prime Minister's comments and the satisfaction today, but can she tell us if she agrees with Secretary Alexander Haig's view that a strictly military outcome cannot endure over time?
I am a little bit at a loss because of the question. We went to recapture what was ours. We had to do it by military means because the Argentines would not leave peacefully otherwise. We condemned their military adventurism. We were perfectly right to repossess what was already ours and to look after and to defend British subjects. That is not a military solution. That is repossessing what we should never have lost.
Leonard Bray!
Leaving aside Gibraltar, where independence is specifically ruled out by the Treaty of Utrecht, is it not the case that the option open to every British dependency since the war has been independence within the Commonwealth? And that there's nothing in the, that is enshrined in the Charter, and there is nothing in the Charter about size of population. Would my right honourable friend say, therefore, whether if the islanders choose independence, the British government will be prepared on its own, or with whatever friends it can muster, to provide the necessary guarantees so that a people nurtured in the British tradition of democracy and self-fulfilment can have that?
Speaker, I think there are probably three alternatives within the British Commonwealth: independence, associated status, or self-government. I think in the case of a territory as small as the Falklands in population, they would have to have their security guaranteed, whichever of the three they wish to follow. I think it's too early to say what they will wish to do. We will certainly discuss with them under what I call the ordinary British right of self-determination.
Robertson. Now that the hostilities are over and we know how many of our British forces gave their lives in the repossession of the Falkland Islands, will the Prime Minister now consider the views of the relations about bringing the bodies back to Britain for burial, especially in the light of the distressing scenes for relations of the mass burial, the inevitable mass burial at Goose Green and Darwin, shown on television last night? Will the Prime Minister now say that if the relations wish the bodies returned to the United Kingdom, that she will be prepared to do so?
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Honourable Gentleman for the way in which he's raised this and the fact that he realises that the immediate kind of burial is inevitable, but that afterwards, of course, under the normal traditional rules, these people receive a burial, usually locally, and the graves are looked after in perpetuity by the Commonwealth Graves Association. Before we decide what shall be done in the case of deaths in the Falklands, we shall be considering the views of the relatives.
I'm voicing my own expression of admiration for the sacrifice made by all three services. Can I ask my right honourable friend if she can confirm the tremendous price which has been paid by the Royal Fleet of Auxiliary? The three armed services are mentioned very frequently. In actual fact, the Royal Fleet Auxiliary, through, of course, Sir Tristan and Sir Galahad, as two examples, paid a tremendous price. And I think what they have done for the country should be recognised from the top.
Mr. Speaker, yes, the Royal Fleet Auxiliary did pay a tremendous price, but I think neither my honourable friend nor I would wish to single out any particular sacrifice. Each and every one contributed to the successful accomplishment of our objectives, and we mourn each and every one the same as any other.
As well as the appalling loss of life, could the Prime Minister tell us how and when the government proposed to tell the House the full cost of the operation, the cost of garrisoning and maintaining the islands in perpetuity, and what increases in taxes or cuts in social and other services will be necessary to pay for all these costs?
Speaker, of course we shall tell the House under the ordinary rules of supply expenditure. We should have to tell the House. But I hope that the Honourable Gentleman thinks that the money spent is worthwhile.
Well, friend, tell the House whether the arrangements for the Argentine surrender include the surrender of the Argentine mission on Southern Thule Island in the South Sandwich Group, which has been illegally occupied by Argentine troops since 1976, which I learned whilst I was in the Falkland Islands is a continuing source of concern to the people who live there.
Mr. Speaker, we would wish to arrange for the surrender of not only the Falkland Islands, but any people left on the dependencies as well, which would include Southern Thule.
Frank Galloon!
As the Prime Minister has told an American TV audience that she will retain aircraft, rapiers, submarines and ships in the South Atlantic, will she make some estimate for our benefit. How is that going to be paid for by the British people?
Mr. Speaker, if necessary, we have to defend the Falkland Islands alone. We're talking about the lives of British subjects who expect to have the same rights as we ourselves enjoy. And I do not believe the Honourable Gentleman would wish them to have the less. It would mean allocating some of our defence equipment to that particular region. But the NATO defences are not wholly exclusive in the sense that the defence of NATO is affected by what goes on beyond her borders. And I would be absolutely amazed if the Honourable Gentleman, again who makes such good use of his freedom, would begrudge the cash necessary to deny it to those people in the Falklands.
Alan Clark!
Minister, note the comment of a captain in the 2nd Parachute Battalion after the liberation of Goose Green, when he said, "We weren't fighting for principles, we were fighting for people." And would she not agree that those who have sacrificed their lives in these battles, beside the brilliant achievements to which tribute has already been paid, made that sacrifice, and it is a source of pride to the whole country, that British families shall be delivered from oppression no matter how far away or how few in number they may be?
Mr. Speaker, we do our best to uphold what my honourable friend has said. I agree with the person who spoke in Goose Green that we are fighting for people. But people have to have principles by which to live. And they have to be governed by fair principles, because liberty and justice are really the only thing which give life its dignity and meaning. And we will try to uphold those on the part of our citizens wherever they look to us for their defence.
Go in.
Would the Prime Minister accept the insensitivity of the statement made, and I am not sure who made it, about the burial in a mass grave of men who had died in the West in the Falklands? Would she also agree that even if they are reburied, that some assistance should be given to the families of those servicemen who died there, bearing in mind that it's 8,000 miles to travel if they want to pay tribute to their relatives who had died in the course of this conflict?
Yes, I'm grateful to the Honourable Gentleman for raising that particular point. It would be customary if those people find their permanent resting place there in a Commonwealth grave to pay for the families to go and see that grave, of course.
Anthony Ryle.
My right honourable friend given assurance that arrangements will be made to look after the families of those Chinese citizens from Hong Kong who were killed in the attack of Bluff Cove.
I thank my honourable friend. We recognise that we also, of course, have a duty to those because they died in serving our cause, and we will make arrangements accordingly.
Sidney Bidwell.
His statement today mean that under her kind of leadership in the future, there's no participatory role for a saner, more civilised government of Argentina to participate in any international system for the guarantee of peace of that area? Is this not totally unrealistic in view of the geographical factors that we can carry on as a colonial power in those distant shores?
Mr. Speaker, this is British sovereign territory. We're restoring, I know you know all about it, the Honourable Gentleman knows all about that, but I'm amazed at how he manages to ignore it in his every question. It is British sovereign territory and British people. We need the friendliness of neighbouring states, but we do not negotiate sovereignty with them.
Price!
Would my right honourable friend not agree that Resolution 502 of the Security Council was not implemented by the United Nations, but by the valour and courage of Her Majesty's forces and by the determination of my right honourable friend as Prime Minister? And is there not a lesson for the whole House to learn here?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I agree wholly with what my honourable friend has said. No attempt was made by the Argentines to implement Resolution 502.
Flannery!
Could I ask the Prime Minister not to close her mind completely to some discussion under the auspices of the United Nations in future
on the ultimate sovereignty of these islands. Is it not a profound anachronism in 1982 that any state should have sovereign territory 8,000 miles away? Did the Prime Minister worry when, along with the United States, she cleared out 1,400 people from Diego Garcia, who had not a word that they could say, in order to make it into a nuclear base? And is it not a fact that the new government in Mauritius is now demanding that the Americans get off that island and that their 1,400 people go back? Is this question of sovereignty not at the basis of all this, and does it not have within it the seeds of future conflict if we do not act democratically? What would she say if a powerful Argentina had taken the Shetland Islands? Would we tolerate a situation like that?
Mr. Speaker, there is one principle, namely that territorial sovereignty be respected. The moment Diego Garcia was in fact taken by arrangement with Mauritius, and a sum of £3 million in compensation was taken by arrangement and by agreement, fully in accordance with the law. We either uphold territorial sovereignty and international law, or we have international anarchy.
Peter Emmerich.
Well, my right honourable friend realised that nobody could rise the House today without paying tribute to the probably greatest victory in history of an army at the end of a supply line of 8,000 miles, and that achievement is unbelievable. But would she also make clear that she will resist the siren voices, whether it's of politicians on either side of the House or of the media, that she will make no further statement about the future of the Falkland Islands for at least 6 months? They must in fact have the whole of the dust settled. We must get the people back there, and let us not have the government permanently being asked what it is going to do about the future of these islands. We've got to get a peaceful situation back there, first of all.
Mr. Speaker, I agree with my honourable friend that this was a great military victory that will go down in the history books, and I believe it has been unequalled for the brilliance with which it was planned and executed. I very much agree also with my honourable friend that it will take some considerable time for the islanders to settle down, for us to try to see what development possibilities there are, and for us to try to get security for those Falkland Islands. And I think it will take at least 6 months, and I should be surprised if it didn't take a good deal longer.
David Winnick.
Since this country took most of international opinion with us in resisting aggression, is it not equally important to keep the same opinion with this country over the future of the Falklands? And why is the Prime Minister ruling out completely the possibility of a United Nations trusteeship? Is she saying, in effect, that from this time forward there could be no change in the territorial status of the Falkland Islands?
Mr. Speaker, the only change in the territorial status of the Falkland Islands that one would consider is one arranged in conjunction and discussion with the people of the Falkland Islands. That is the way we've gone about looking after those many, many territories and colonies which has previously been within our own trusteeship, and I believe that that is the way we should continue to act in the future.
Robin Maxwell-Hislop.
Full provision be made from public funds for those who have lost their homes, their stock in trade, their personal possessions in the conflict, in a full and generous manner, and in a more full and generous manner even than war damage compensation, to which Falkland Islanders contributed generously in taxation during the war, was paid to persons in the United Kingdom who lost their homes or their property through enemy action.
Mr. Speaker, may I look at that before answering finally, because I'm not quite certain what insurance arrangements were made by the Falkland Islands and how they would operate in conjunction with war damage. It would, of course, be our intention to be generous in these matters.
Down.
I haven't heard anything about the Gurkhas. Can the Prime Minister tell us whether in fact any of the Gurkhas lost their lives or were wounded? And will we treat the Gurkhas, who serve for less pay than our men, as generously as indeed we will our own people?
Mr. Speaker, I did mention the Gurkhas. The 1st 7th Gurkhas advanced on Mount William and, of course, had a prominent part in the final stages, in the crucial stages of this battle. We have not yet got in full casualty lists, which is why I have not been able to give them. But I gladly pay full tribute to those excellent fighting men, the Gurkhas.
It's Douglas Hamilton.
Friend, consider requesting the United States government to assist with the transfer of Argentine prisoners of war back to the Argentine in view of the enormous numbers involved.
Mr. Speaker, yes, if necessary, we shall have to get help. First, I want to know just whether we can get full cessation of hostilities with the mainland. Then we have a number of our own ships there, and I think we could possibly get some of them back faster in our own ships that are already about than we could by either chartering other ships or securing other ships from other nations because of the time it would take to get there. We might require help with something like Hercules aircraft.
Dubs.
Is the Prime Minister now in a position to say whether at any point since the Argentine invasion the British government requested from the American government on a purchase or lease basis some of the American aerial reconnaissance aircraft, the AWACS?
Mr. Speaker, I do not give any details of help from the United States government. I can only say that it has been splendid, and I believe we've had everything we asked for. May I just point out that AWACS aircraft would need somewhere to land, and we just haven't got anywhere for it to land.
Right Honourable Friend, accept that the task force, the services of this country and our maritime marine have proved themselves to be the finest and the most professional in the world, as well as being the most compassionate, that her leadership has inspired our nation, and that her assurance about the long-term security of the Falkland Islands is much appreciated because of the growing strategic importance of that area of the world to the peace of the world.
I agree with my honourable friend that the Falkland Islands have a strategic importance not only in shipping terms, because of the shipping lanes, but also because they are, of course, the entrance to the Antarctic, which I believe will become more and more important as the years go by. I agree with him about our armed forces. Their professionalism is remarked upon wherever in the world they serve.
To Michael Foot.
The Right Honourable Lady, first of all, questions about the three British journalists who were detained at the beginning of the incident. And could I ask whether fresh representations will now be made in these new circumstances for their release, because they too were also engaged in doing their proper duties when they were detained, and I presume there may be also some British prisoners who will be part of the discussion too. But could I also put to the Right Honourable Lady, in the light of her replies about Resolution 502 and any participation of the United Nations, is it not the fact that despite the very great military achievement, and everybody acknowledges that, is it not the fact that we had very considerable international support, both from the United States and from countries in other parts of the world, at the United Nations and in practical terms? And were we not glad enough to have that support when we were dealing with some of these problems? And does she not recognize that international support will be needed in the future too? Yes. And we will have to go to the United Nations and argue our case over these coming months. And is she not therefore unwise to dismiss that approach to the problem? Yes. She will have to return to it in the end, and she might as well acknowledge it now.
Yes. With regard to the three journalists, I have no further news to give the Right Honourable Gentleman. Representations are made, of course, through the Swiss Embassy, which represents our own interests in the Argentine and we will, of course, make fresh inquiries. There are also a few of our own British prisoners of war who we hope will be returned, as we have returned so many of the Argentine prisoners. And, of course, the early ones in the Falklands were also repatriated to this country. With regard to Resolution 502, may I continue to point out to the Right Honourable Gentleman, it was not honoured by the Argentine. Yeah. It was not honoured. We had to secure the withdrawal without Resolution 502, and because it was not honoured, we do not need to negotiate in any way with the United Nations or anyone else about the British sovereignty of those islands. And may I make that absolutely clear? What we have done for years is, under the non-self-governing territories article of the United Nations Charter, report to them about the increasing provision for representation of the people in the government of their own territory, and that we shall continue to do.
Michael Putt!
Lady again, she will have to speak in a very different tone if she's going to conduct any successful discussions in New York and elsewhere over the coming months. The passage, it was the she continues to miss the point about Resolution 502. It was partly because of the passage of that resolution that we got support from the Americans, material military support along with other support. It was partly because of that passage of that resolution that we got economic support elsewhere. And for the Right Honourable Lady to suggest that she doesn't need any international support to solve this problem is an absurdity and will be proved so over the months ahead.
As I did not say that, will the Right Honourable Gentleman kindly withdraw it?